It's 11 o'clock and time to go to work with Marty Nemko.
Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Coming up later in the show, I will absolutely do three-minute career makeovers on you. I like to call them workovers. So if you are someone you love is stuck, either because you still don't know what you want to be when you grow up, or you know what you want to be, but you can't land a job, or you're scared of getting laid off, or you're self-employed and things are not going so well in this terrible economy, or you're thinking about being self-employed and want to run an idea by me, any kind of career-related problem is fair game, and the price is certainly right. I will invite you to call in about, maybe 15, 20 minutes, something like that. I did a little thought experiment, not in the abstract, but because California organization that advocates for special education people with special needs, helping them get jobs, wanted me to be their keynoter. So I decided, how can I make this keynote really relevant and not the usual BS that the that kind of suffuses those events. And I put myself in the shoes of being a parent of a kid, well, not some little disability, but a parent of a kid who had cerebral palsy, who was in a wheelchair, severe cerebral palsy, so he was in a wheelchair and had some mild cognitive dysfunction, like an 80 IQ. What would I do as a career counselor to help this kid get a job? And so we'll talk about that. But first, there is, if there's any kind of a core issue that undergirds so much of the difference between our success and our failure, it's motivation. You can call it stuckness, motivation, willpower, overcoming procrastination, choose your words, but bottom line, that's what it is. And as a career counselor, I spend a lot of my time helping my clients try to overcome procrastination. And so, and periodically on the show, I do offer tips here and there. But I decided that I would open today's show by putting together a collection of my master collection of the best suggestions, strategies, tactics, tips, ideas, whatever, again, you want to call it, for replacing procrastination with motivation, with willpower, with lighting a fire under your butt. So here we go. The first one, and I'm always a little chastened about even mentioning this because it feels like I'm this Reverend Dimmesdale revival preacher from Wuthering Heights or something. But maybe the most fundamental basis for getting you unstuck is to get you to move from being someone who's trying to get away with as little work as possible and instead becoming somebody who seeks work. Most of the people that I know who are successful do seek work, a lot of work. They don't try to do the least they can get away with. They try to cram in as much as they can. So I encapsulate that whole concept into two words: embrace work. I always like to talk about my father, and my father is a perfect example how work was fantastic for him. The guy's a Holocaust survivor. Or I say was, he died a few years ago. And despite suffering all the Holocaust tortures losing his family, coming to America, dumped on a cargo boat and dropped in the Bronx with no money, no family, no English, no nothing, again, except just the scars of the Holocaust torture, how did he survive psychologically? How did he survive practically? Well, for him, work was the healer. He took any job, worked in a factory sewing shirts in Harlem, and he just buried himself in that and not processing his losses. And that, as a child, that's what made me realize the power of work. Not only did it heal him, which took me a while to figure, I'm a kid, I was egotistical, I had no idea about him healing, but I saw certainly as an adult that that was the major healer for him. But it certainly enabled him, despite being poor, not speaking English, suffering all that stuff, be able to provide for my mom, my sister, and me. And he felt good about himself. He was a contributor. So that, embracing work. He never was trying to figure out how he could do as little as possible. It was always, how could he do as much as possible to make a little more money? I just think that's a, you know, that's a mindset that is invaluable as a foundation to avoiding procrastination. The other thing that's related to that is if you embrace work as being not only a value to family, but also to society, it's like cosmic justice. It's like you're not being a parasite on the earth. The more you do, the more you are a contributor to the earth. As long as you start to accept that, then you can accept the following corollary, which is that not everything must be pleasant. When I have so many of my clients say, well, you know, I really want a job that's pleasant and I can get up in the morning and jump out of bed and look forward to going to work in the morning. And that's just not real. If you use that as the standard, as the requirement for why you're going to work, you're going to work very little. I mean, unless you get this really cool job and you're, you know, a mattress tester or a food sampler, or a beer taster or a fashion model or get to host a show on KALW. You're going to find that a lot of the work is just not pleasant. And that's why it's so foundational. You say, so what if it's not pleasant? You don't even think about it. It's like there is this foundational responsibility to yourself, to your family, to society, to the cosmos, to be as productive as possible. So for me, that is number one foundational principle for helping you to get unstuck, get motivated, replace the procrastination with willpower. It starts with embracing work. But from there, it gets a little less Calvinist. So the other thing is, frankly, I'll be really honest, doesn't matter to me. I don't need inspiration. It's like my foundational belief in the power of the importance of work makes me not need inspiration. But many people need additional inspiration in order to be motivated to work, to not procrastinate. Well, there are various sources, of course, of inspiration. One is certainly what Goethe said, an exciting goal. I love Goethe's quote about it. He says, dream no small dreams, for they have no power to move the hearts of people. So maybe for you, what is important to motivate you is having at least one big, exciting goal, whether it's to be a performer, even if it's avocational, whether it's to write the great American novel, whether it's, yeah, maybe you want to eventually run for office, whatever. But having a big goal can be important. Having a role model can be another source of inspiration. Somebody who you see who maybe grew up in the same circumstances that you grew up. Let's take the cliched stereotype. Grew up poor, grew up with parents who were abusive, were raped as a child, whatever. We all know that there are many of those people who have transcended those problems, like my father indeed transcended no education, no money, no English, no nothing, and the Holocaust to be, you know, he was no superstar, but he ran a small little store and made enough money to be an ethical, honorable guy. That's a heck of a role model as far as I'm concerned. So for some people, what's going to get you unstuck, keep you motivated, is realizing that one of your peers can you know, have done it, or a role model. It could be a famous person, or it could be somebody you know. For example, there is a guy who I find personally inspiring. I don't think it really makes me more motivated. If I were any more motivated, I'd be like one of these whirling dervishes or a hamster in a hamster wheel. But Winston Churchill is amazing. Because Winston Churchill, who we consider one of the icons, the most influential people, the most respected people of the 20th century, this is a guy who hated school, was terrible in school. His father hated him. His first military battle, the big major battle, was in the was called the Dardanelles, the Gallipoli, the famous Gallipoli campaign, and he lost 140,000 men. And then he lost his first, or at least he lost three elections in a row. He went broke in the stock market. He, despite being key to winning World War II, even afterwards, he lost again in an election. And yet Churchill remains one of the most influential, respected people of the 20th century. So even the most amazing people fail, usually more often than they succeed. You know, in life, you have one big win, like Edward Gibbon. I'm just reading The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. This is a guy who, that's all he really did. He wrote that in his autobiography, and he hermited it. He basically sat in his room for his whole life. He had nothing, you know, he had a bunch of, I don't know about his failures, to be honest. But, you know, he had one big win, and he's, you know, for anybody who's kind of a academic or scholarly type, he's like, you know, a god. So you don't need to win at everything. You need to win at something. Okay. Another source of inspiration. Sometimes you need a champion. You know, my wife says that there, you know, that some of her success is attributed to the fact that I am relentless in championing her. And sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes you're motivated by somebody telling you you can't do it. And here I have to say there is some relevance to me here. A few years ago, I developed a hand condition. It's not painful at all, but it's this weird, rare condition that makes three of my fingers inert. It's unable, unable to straighten them. They're curled. They won't straighten. I've been to the world's greatest doctors. I know what the options. There are surgery options, but the surgery options are not good, so I'm letting it go. Bottom line, I now, for example, I had to stop playing basketball, and I'm a pianist. And the doctor said to me, "I'm sorry, Marty, you won't be able to play the piano anymore. Because I can't play with my left pinky, it's completely bent in, and that's a very important finger for any kind of depth in piano playing. It's what allows you to play octaves and tenths and things like that. My second finger, my index finger in my left hand, is half bent, and I can hardly play with it. And then in my right hand, the most central finger, the third finger, is completely bent, and I can basically occasionally play a few notes with my knuckle, but it's going to make a lot of mistakes." How did I react to that? When that doctor told me I was not going to be able to play the piano, I said, and I can't say the word, but F you to myself. And I thought, I brought my little portable keyboard. It doesn't sound like a grand piano or anything, but I thought I would play something for you as a seven-fingered pianist. And it's a song I wrote, and I deliberately wrote it with my career counseling clients in mind. My career counseling clients typically, they come in a little despondent or scared, depressed, low energy. And then the progress gets slow. You know, people are not electrons. They don't move fast. They move slowly and unpredictably. They make progress, and then they usually succeed. And then they feel a peace of mind that comes from that success. So I wrote this piece to kind of reflect that process. And it's about 2 minutes. So I'm going to, Mr. Marty Nemko, seven-fingered piano player, is going to play it for you now. Thank you. Huh, I even managed to get through it without any mistakes. Anyway, so sometimes indeed one can be inspired by somebody telling you, no, you can't do it. Anyway, this is Work with Marty Nemko, and the topic is motivation, how to replace your procrastination with willpower. And I've got a lot more ideas that I want to share. However, this is probably as good a time as any for me to open the phones to you. So if you are stuck, if you are demotivated, unmotivated, if you are don't know how to take the first baby step forward, and you'd like me to do what I call a 3-minute career makeover or a workover on you, I promise I won't work you over by pummeling you. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls to come in, as I said, I do have more strategies and suggestions. Think of this as a buffet. This is not where I expect you to take all these ideas and jump on them. But if you can find one or two from the smorgasbord, you might even find yourself satisfied. Okay. Next, another key way to I think this may be the most potent way that my clients have felt that they can overcome their procrastination, and that is this tip. I call it "Do It the Fun Way." Usually people tend to procrastinate the big projects, so for example, a report or something that you have to do. And so you feel, I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to screw it up. So, boy, I better make it long, and I better have a lot of charts, and I better have a lot of research citations and all that. And the thought of that makes it so odious that you simply procrastinate until the last second because you can't stomach the thought of doing it. But if instead you said, you know what, all right, you know, maybe that is the best way to do it, but, you know, I'm going to try to do it the fun way. What would be the fun way to do the report? Well, maybe I hate research. Maybe I hate charts and spreadsheets and all that crap. But I like talking to people. So maybe I can do this report by talking to people and interviewing them and quoting them. And maybe instead of it being long, maybe people would appreciate a short report. Or maybe, well, I kind of like formatting. I like using Microsoft Word to format it prettily or whatever. So I'll spend a little time making it pretty and nice and easy and accessible. Now, it may be worse, it may be better, but you probably won't procrastinate it. You'll probably get started earlier and more likely to get it done. And maybe even, because you're doing it in the way that for you is fun, it's utilizing your best strengths, and it may, just maybe, come out a little better. So one of the strategies that has helped a number of my clients who have been former procrastinators, former people who don't get stuff done well, is to ask yourself, in planning the project or whatever, what would be the fun way for me to do it? And throughout, as you're doing the project, keep asking yourself, okay, is there a fun way to do this? Is there a more fun way to do this? Especially if you're feeling stuck. Okay, again, phone number. If you would like a 3-minute career makeover or workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm going to make you embarrassed because I'm going to start off with just a little bit of appreciation.
Oh, thank you.
Hello?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. I got another call coming in, but I'm going to ignore it. You're courageous enough to not believe in an afterlife. I share this. This is things I love about you. You're a Holocaust survivor, and you're doing well, and you're dealing with that, and I love
it. I'm not a Holocaust survivor. My father's a Holocaust.
I'm saying you're a generation of a Holocaust. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I meant to say. And you're a lot further right than I'm pretty far left, and I love that about you because as you say, you learn from people that you and a lot of my friends don't listen to you because of that, but I listen to you because of it, and I learn a lot. And I'm one of the few people are so exactly they have to find they're part of the spectrum on the dial. And anyway, so here's my problem.
I will make one comment about that. It does sadden me that the very people who say they most celebrate diversity stop celebrating ideological diversity, dare it even for a moment. And I'm a moderate Democrat.
I know.
But dare and even a single idea or two veer right of center, suddenly they not only want to change this channel, but they want very often they want the host taken off the air. It's a little bit hypocritical, it strikes me. But
burn the channel.
Yeah, burn it, right. Occupy the channel.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the new one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, so me, I am just finding out things about myself. I think I'm deathly afraid of my first job out of college, and I know I'm almost 70, and I'm a physicist, and I'm going into neurology, and but I don't do it the way you're talking about. I work like crazy. I work so hard. I really have a hard time with balancing with sleep and with being nice to people. I'm kind of ruthless. I mean, I don't tend to be. I'm a kind person, but when I get I really care about it, and I've got like 50 inventions and 25 projects, and but I'm suddenly realizing I think I'm deathly afraid of I've come into corporate culture a couple times, and I'm afraid of the mall, not the mall, but the mall, that too, the mall of corporate culture. And I was just saying a colleague up in Bellingham, Washington the other day, if I don't be careful, I'll get a job, it's like, oh, I watched myself say that. So, I mean, one thing is just being aware of it, but, I've got some pretty nice things. I got some ideas about electrodes in neurology and stuff like that, but so that's my deal.
And so is the question you're asking me is how to be more focused, how to be less
Well, I got this marvelous book, which I will plug. What the heck is it called? Here it is. David Allen's book, Getting Things Done.
Right. Okay.
And so, that has been like a guru to me. I tell you, I do Buddhist. I have a teacher, but this guy's been like, man.
So tell me what's one thing you got from the book that's helping you?
To plan your work. I tend to be blackboard heavy, and like not produce the circuit. But give 25 designs and 25 examples and work them all out. So I shy away from that. But what he's saying is, you got a project, you have to do a lot of cafe yellow pad work. Planning out the strategy of your project. You have to look at the project and do some thought there. I don't do that. I throw myself at it. Or it throws itself at me.
I'm just curious. There's so many people. The smartest person I've ever met is a guy who probably didn't achieve anywhere near as much as he wanted because his addiction to novelty was so great that he would like to start 50 projects. And yes, he threw himself into all of them, but he never saw them through to completion, let alone marketing. I'm guilty of that too. I am just addicted to writing some new, another article, another book, another screenplay. And so I don't take the time to go and market them. I'd rather write another article.
Yeah.
You said you had 50 inventions, 25 projects. You say you throw them into, you cover blackboards. You're getting to meet in your 70. Is there a project right now? That you should really say, you know what, I am going to relentlessly follow through on this one project so that, when you're, just like what I was talking about, Edward Gibbon, he said he didn't mind dying because he felt he had, while he didn't have a family and he didn't believe in God or an afterlife, he felt he had contributed one big thing. Should you contribute one big thing? Should you choose from among your 50 inventions, 25 projects, and make sure that at minimum you contribute that one big thing so that you will feel on your deathbed, which hopefully is 30 years from now, that you will have lived a life well led?
Two responses to that. I've got, I actually have probably 50 projects as well, but I've got the real long list, the short list, the shorter list, the three, and the big one, and I've got them all tiered like that. The thing I don't have, and this is what I'm getting from your suggestion, is filtering which of my children I want to survive, because a lot of this stuff...
Children, you mean your ideas, of course.
Yes, of course. It's cringy. We're talking about rabbits and, vivisection. I started getting close enough to the real world about it that I started getting the cringe feelings just as pissed.
That's what I, you know, I'm going to interrupt you here because I want to get take some other calls. But, you know, it seems to me you should pick the one that is not so fringy that it's unrealistic. You want to make an actual difference.
No, cringe. Cringe, not fringe.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Cringe is vivisection, the kind of experiments you have to do with neurology.
I see. Okay. So you said you were dealing with the intersection of physics and neurology. So pick the one thing and just make yourself do what my wife did. When my wife was facing her dissertation, she was overwhelmed by the enormity of that.
Sure.
And so what we did was, in my crude, I can draw no better than a stick figure, but I drew one of those thermometers.
Yeah.
That you know, when a church or a nonprofit's trying to raise money, they make a sign with a thermometer, and every time they raise another 5,000, they color it in.
Yeah, we
did that with her dissertation, and we I drew this thermometer. It could kind of looked like a penis, actually.
You can say that on the radio.
Sure, why not?
Oh, why not?
On the left side, it was all the little milestones that needed to go from in order to get the dissertation done.
That's David Allen's thing. Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
So every time she achieved one, we took purple as her favorite color, and we simply colored it in purple. I gave her a big kiss in front of the refrigerator, and that really, as silly as that sounds, it helped her get her dissertation. And so what I'm inviting you to do is to take the project, what you call your children, the child that you're most, that you'd most be most proud of on your deathbed to have left as a legacy for the world, and make a thermometer like that. And make a point of coloring it in every time you get one done. Does that make any sense?
It brings up another thing, and that is I don't do it for the world. I do it for the idea, and I don't know how to save the world.
Okay, what's your first name? What's your first name?
Ed.
Ed. Ed, you know, there's different views on this. But I do believe that, and I think of this about academics, very often they do things for ideas that have no impact on the world, but it's kind of fun for them to think about. That feels narcissistic to me. If you're a bright guy who's got a physicist expertise and neurology expertise, to just do it for the idea, for the fun of it, feels a little bit like you're squandering that incredible life energy that you've been given on this earth. I think it's important that you do consider what is both interesting to you but would make a difference in the world. Anyway, I want to leave you with that, and I thank you very much for calling, Ed.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. I think a lot of lessons embedded in that. Before I go to the phones, I want to give out the phone number. If you are stuck, you or someone you love is stuck in your work life, have any kind of a work-related problem, probably the nicest compliment that anybody's ever given me, Ron Owens on KGO said to me, I've been his career expert. I've come on his show for 26 years. And he said, Marty, you are unstumpable. So I thrive on hard problems. If you have a hard career-related problem, I don't care if you're an ex-felon. I don't care if you're a heroin addict. I don't care if you're a CEO who feels empty. If you have a work problem and a hard one, I almost always can give you at least a baby step in the right direction that you may not have thought of before. So, and then the price is certainly right. It's zero. So for a 3-minute career makeover or workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, before I go to the phones, I want to offer a couple more of these tips for converting your procrastination into willpower. Very often, human beings, especially I'll be really honest, average human beings, are terribly worried about being embarrassed. They spend an incredible amount of energy avoiding being embarrassed by somebody. And so you can use that fear of embarrassment as a way to get you motivated. So let's say you are trying to lose 20 pounds, as I am, or you are trying to get this project done or finish a book or whatever, or apply to graduate schools or get a job or whatever. By telling everybody your goal, it makes you feel accountable. Like, because then the next time they see you, they'll say, well, how's your weight loss doing? And you haven't lost any weight. It can make you feel embarrassed. And that can be a positive thing. Also, daily check-ins with somebody. If there is, rather than just broadly telling everybody, or in addition to that, you can go and find one person that you're going to check in with every day. And maybe it's a peer thing where you check in with them and they check in with you. You know, your goal may be to lose weight. The other goals may be to land a job. So you report into each other. That accountability, that fear of embarrassment that you hadn't done squat and that you were watching sitcoms all day when you should have been looking for a job, you know, can help. Of course, you can lie, but, you know, it... That fear of embarrassment. And there's also a new high-tech way of making yourself accountable and embarrassed, and that is this. There's a website called stickit.com, S-T-I-C-K, it.k. I think it's with two Ks for some reason. I guess because that was the only URL they could get. Stickit.com. And what it does is this. Let's say I wanted to lose 20 pounds. You promise to lose 20 pounds, to lose a pound, let's say a pound a week. And what happens is, and you put it on the computer, just on this piece, on this computer website, and it, if you meet your goal, great, congratulates you, fantastic. If you don't meet your goal, and an amount of money that you specify gets donated to a charity you'd hate. So if you were a Democrat, let's say, and you said, okay, I want 20, if I don't meet my weekly goal of losing a pound, $20 goes to the Ronald Reagan Library. Okay, that can make you motivate you to do it, and they've got a feature in there where you can have a, what's called a verifier, which would be a real live person who would come to your house, you know, your friend of yours, you know, who would come to your house and weigh you and see if in fact you are a pound thinner than you were a week earlier. So stickit.com is a great way to enhance your accountability. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. Hello.
Hi. It's Kathleen.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, I'm calling from the East Bay, and I'm actually in the midst of a transition, a very big transition for me between working, I guess, since I was 17 and I'm 67, and into retirement. But because of the economy, I'm not going to be able to afford to totally retire.
Mm-hmm.
And I am trying to manage, actually, a couple of things. One is a current very toxic work environment, and I don't want to work on that because I think that if I get motivated in my own way, that won't bother me. I can let it go off me like water off a duck's back.
Right.
But the second aspect is something that you brought on by your very honest telling of your story and playing that music, which really went to my heart.
Thank you.
The idea of trying to work into work after having retired and not knowing quite where to start, even though I have a lot of experience.
Great. Well, I'd be happy to have. So that's a core. That's kind of the core thing I do in these 3-minute career makeovers. We call these encore careers, and I'll be happy to help you try to find one. So tell me a few little things about yourself, just a few nuggets that what makes Kathleen different from what Mary would be. Tell me a little bit about what makes Kathleen Kathleen.
I work from my heart. And I also seem to be very involved in grassroots level understanding of workers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked in both management and for the majority of my time in my career, I've been an educator. But there's a kind of deeper meaning of educator, which means to draw out. And I think that unites all of my careers, which have been as a gallery worker, a worker in an art gallery, a person that did social work, a mentor of teachers.
So would it be, I'm gonna propose a very specific career idea, not because I think it's necessarily right, but it's a starting place. Mm-hmm. And we're going to create a Kathleen meter, and the Kathleen meter goes from 0 to 10. 0 means the idea makes you puke, and 10 means it gives you ecstasy, okay?
Okay.
So the idea of working for a nonprofit as a kind of a tutor, maybe either illiterate adults or long-term welfare recipients who are trying to get into the workforce and maybe don't know how to dress well or don't, you know, and or don't know how to or have difficulty showing up on time, maybe some interview preparation. What would that idea score on the Kathleen meter?
A 5.
A 5. What keeps it from being a 10?
I have to devote a lot of energy when I need to go into populations that are really needy.
Mm-hmm. So it would be a less needy population. Had you ever thought of doing some work for a union? What would that score? And being some kind of, even somebody who's answering phones, you know, people who are calling with a union complaint are very angry or despondent, and they need a calm, heart-centered person to simply answer the phone, listen well, and get them transferred to the right person so they can get their needs met. What would that score on the meter?
Probably a 5 also.
Okay, what keeps it from being a 10?
That I have this idea that there's more that I can offer.
Good. Okay, so a higher level thing. Give me some clues now. When you say more, define more for me.
I'm now working as a grants writer, and I like that work.
That's
I like
fantastic.
The writing, and I have fantasized about writing other kinds of things. I write poetry on my own, and I have a fascination with reading. So I thought that maybe I could use some of my skills to move into an area other, kind of new area to me.
Now, given that you're, you know, a grant writer, that in you know, whenever the economy is bad, especially, the person who can bring in the money is invaluable. Is it possible that you need to simply do a little more thinking about, and we can do it together a bit, what kind of organizations you might want to write grants for that would be new, you know, something different, different subject area, but that would utilize your skills but still be close to your values?
Yeah, I think that's the clue for me right now.
Okay. And so let's, as an exercise, if I said I gave you $1 million, and the that's the good news, and the I don't know if it's bad news, but the bad news is you've got to give it away. To whom or what would you give it?
To young girls, to women in the third world fighting difficulties, to microeconomics.
Okay. So when you say young girls, because you need money now, and it may not be so easy for you to get it. You know, it sounds like you need money. You did. You said you can't retire yet. If I asked you to go and look to the websites that have the list of nonprofits like idealist.org, and look for the ones that serve young girls, and then contact each of them and say that you're interested in doing some grant writing for them, for because you need some money, but also would help them get some money, what is that score in the meter?
10.
There you go. All right. So, well, I'm glad you called Work with Marty Nemko. Happy to have gotten you to attend.
And, yes, and thank you for your piano work.
Oh, it was fun. It was a pleasure. And I'm glad you liked it.
Thank you.
Okay, you take care. So, you can see we can solve problems. All I need you to do is call. Sometimes I'm amazed that, you know, getting the free advice and getting free help, people don't, even when it's free, people don't want it. So so if you've been hesitant to call, I don't bite. And as long as you're willing to tell me your truth, because that's it. You know, if you can tell me your truth, I can be helpful. If you've got a career problem of any sort, the harder the better, actually. The phone number is 415-841-4134. What's that? It's the number for? It's the number for what I call a workover or a three-minute career makeover. And on this show here at KALW, call Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. Before we go back to the phones, I'm trying to intersperse my some tips that have worked best for my clients in overcoming procrastination. And this one is, you know, it's going to make you puke. But it's so important that I have to mention and hopefully put a little different spin on it. Baby steps. Everybody knows it's a cliche that it's helpful to break things down into baby steps, and it's true. It's a cliche for a reason because it works. I mean, they even made a feature motion picture about it. What About Bob, where the psychiatrist that he saw had only one solution, which is always to tell him to take baby steps. So when Bob was getting even on the elevator, he said, okay, one foot onto the elevator, baby step. Okay, second foot onto the elevator, push the button, close the door. You know, so baby steps. Sometimes it's too simplistic. People can't quite make it happen. And I've thought about why. A lot of people don't know how to break it down into baby steps. They may know they should, but the project is too difficult to figure out exactly what should they do first, what should they do second, what should they do third. That's a perfect time to get help. So you got a big problem that's overwhelming, and you don't know how to break it down baby steps. Go get help. So I brought into the studio a human being with a real-life example of that. She was formerly my client and one of the few people who I've ever converted from a client to a friend. She's a very dear friend of mine. Her name is Jeffrey Givens, and she works at Children's Hospital in Oakland as a combination in the fundraising department, essentially. But she also is a talented singer and performer and is trying to become an actor and a dancer and all those other good things. And so she had an audition coming up. And it was a big audition, important audition. And she was she had picked out a monologue piece. And why don't I stop there? Jeffrey Givens, first of all, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. Nice to have you on.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Good. And so tell the story.
Okay, so I had an audition coming up, and I had finally chosen a monologue, and I had a week to go before the audition.
Right.
And I sent a video of it to you, and it was really just my first time reading it, so there was a lot of problems, and I knew there were a lot of problems. And you responded with a lot of solutions. And when I saw that list of solutions...
Suggestions, basically, for improving it, yeah.
Yes. There were just so many of them that I felt overwhelmed. I freaked out. I was like, how am I going to get this done?
I'm going to interrupt you for a second. There is an art to knowing. Should you normally... If you give one or two pieces of feedback, it's not going to overwhelm the person, but it does it provide enough feedback. And I could have given them one or two at a time, but I was frankly too lazy to go back 15 times and give you, lots of little two bits. So I said, what the heck? She's my friend. So I made this list like 30 things for a two-minute monologue, 30 things she needed to, that she could improve. Fair enough? Is that accurate? Okay,
yes.
Continue.
So when I told you this, you broke it down a little bit further. It's like, okay, you don't have to do everything. Just choose a few things and work on it, 15 minutes, half hour at a time. And if the more you work on that, the more you will improve. And I did do that. At first, I just freaked out, couldn't do it. But after a little bit, I did start to do that. And I did, in fact, improve. And when I finally had my audition a week later, I felt a lot more confident about the audition piece that I chose.
Was it helpful? One of the things I said is, each of these things you may only need to practice for 1, 3, or 5 minutes. So I really made it shorter than 15 and 30 minutes. Was that statement helpful to you, honestly, or not really?
Yes, it was helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes if I tried something out and it didn't work, then I moved on to the next
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. Again, the embedded principles in there is make it short, make it easy, do it the fun way. It was not like you must do this. It was not intensity. It was, hey, this is a smorgasbord. Here are 30 things you could do to improve the thing. It doesn't have to, it's not brain surgery where everything has to be right. We're just trying to get the monologue to be as good as possible. Play, I used the word, did I not use the word play around with each one of these?
Yes, you did.
It's that kind of an attitude. The combination, it's not just breaking down to baby steps, it's a mindset. It's combining these strategies that I've been talking about earlier, doing it the fun way, breaking it down into really short little tasks that can really matter. Now, hopefully you still haven't heard yet on the audition, but I would have loved to be able to tell the story. And then she got the part. But it's we can't get there. We're not there yet. So.
Not quite there yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks very much, Jeffrey, for anything else you want to add about that?
About that, no, but I would like to add that I saw you playing your piano piece, and it still amazes me that you can only do that with 7 fingers.
That's
it's wonderful.
Thank you. Okay, so good time now to go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hey, my name is Matthew. I'm calling from San Francisco, and I just wanted to say that was a great piano piece, and thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Let's see, I've been in printing for a long time, working in printing and copy shops. And my last job, I got fired very unfairly. Mm. So then I didn't get unemployment because I was honest. I told them I wanted to be self-employed. So they said, oh, you're self-employed. You don't need any unemployment, even though I have no money coming in. Mm. So I spent what little I had on savings on starting up my own print broker business.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the websites, getting business cards and that sort of thing, and getting a business phone. But I'm just having some fears that it's just not going to work.
Everybody I've spoken to over the last 10 years increasingly is that the print business is drying up. There's so much of the jobs done by massive, printers online and otherwise that the print brokering is a tough, tough business. There's so much desktop publishing stuff done in-house. Is that, you think, the reason why you're having difficulty, or is it more?
I'm just afraid that just people won't get it and they won't want to work with me.
Well, what is it? Let's hear the pitch. How are you? Why should I use you as a print broker rather than going to Vistaprint or some other print thing? There's a big print operation that's based right here in Oakland. Why do I need you?
Well, because. Most of the time, working in the business, most of the time you get a file, someone's done something in Microsoft Office, and it's not good enough for print. people don't realize those home publishing programs are great for your little inkjet printer if you want to print out one or two. But if you have a big job, if you want to make a presentation material, it's not going to look good. So I know what kind of formats, you know, what kind of files you need, what kind of format you need.
Question now, those are, you know, so these are very small jobs. Isn't that the kind of thing that people take to Kinko's and Kinko's will give them that, you know, or any of the million, you know, it seems like there's a printing shop. I live in on the Berkeley-Oakland border. And as I drive down Shattuck Avenue, there's five of these little printing places. And I go down University Avenue and there's seven more. You know, is that service glutted?
Yeah, that service, usually those shops will just take what you have, just print it, you get it, and then you're like, well, why doesn't this look like I thought it would? And they said, well, because, you know, they just tell you, well, because you used Word, you didn't use the right program. They just basically take your file and just hit print. Where I'm different, whereas I understand color profiles, I understand resolution, I understand the technical details of printing, and I can adjust your file to make it, you know, look as good as possible.
What's the target? Is it individuals? Is it small businesses? Who's your target market? Who's the person most likely to give you serious dollars? Because, you know, for a $50 consulting fee, it's not worth it. You know, you've got to be getting in the hundreds of dollars per client. Is that right?
Right.
So,
well, my target is like office managers, because that's who I noticed that was calling me the most when I was at shops, was
okay.
Office managers. Because they had the money and they had to get the printing done for their people in the office, from business cards to, you know, presentation materials, posters, and that sort of thing.
Great. How important is it that they're local? Is it the kind of thing where being nearby is going to be a plus or not necessarily?
I think being local is very important, because that's the thing that first daunted me on the web, was like everyone had a print website.
Exactly. Not good. I'm going to keep interrupting you to keep things flowing here. So what city do you live in?
I live in San Francisco.
Right. That's right. You said you live in San Francisco. So what I would do is, I mean, given that the web is like a worldwide vehicle and it's very hard to get yourself to stand out, I would do this in a very low-tech way. There's a time for high-tech marketing and there's a time for low-tech marketing. And if it were me, I would have a really good flyer that I would drop, if maybe not even a flyer. I'm not normally a guy who likes this stuff. I call them tchotchkes, but they're, you know, these promotional things. Do you know those memo pads that are imprinted around four sides that have the name of a business around them?
Yeah.
I would go there. They cost about $3 a piece in quantity of 100. I'd probably get those and drop, you know, and of course I would have the name of your print shop and what you do, the, you know, really compelling argument, and give those to the office managers of good size. I would actually get in my, I'd take up, have a big satchel of them, and I would walk into a major office building that, and every time there was like a good size company where they could perhaps, based on the name, simply on the name of the company and how large their office is, I'd walk in and I'd ask if they ever have a need for print work. And if they say, yeah, sometimes we do, I would give them one of those $3 things so that they would have that on their desk all the time. As well as while you're in there, you're given it, therefore that gives you a chance to develop a little relationship with that office, you know, manager person, or at minimum the receptionist. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
There you go. I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Yeah, hi. My name is John. I'm calling from San Francisco.
Hi, John. How can I help?
Hi there. Well, I kind of got two directions I wanted to ask you about, but I don't know which one would be best. One is that I work.
Pick the one that's going to be of greatest interest to my listeners that will both benefit you and perhaps benefit my listeners.
Okay. I think it's probably this one, Dan. I work for a very large systems integration company.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there since January of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the organization is growing very rapidly, and I've done very, very well so far, but it's now coming up on, you know, kind of that promotion cycle, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to figure out is, how can I optimize that opportunity? Because, you know, everyone's giving great reviews and et cetera, but how can I really leverage that to maximize that?
This is what you do. If you got a meeting been set up yet, a salary review meeting, or is there going to be no meeting?
No.
No meeting. Okay, no, so what I would do is I would create a portfolio. I would write a note to my boss and say, I understand that a salary review is upcoming, and I thought it might be helpful as you make your decision to take a look at some. Here are some of the letters of, you know, praise, I've emails that I've gotten. Here are some of the, here is a listing of the work products I created that were above and beyond. Here were, you know, all have a kind of a brag pack of all the things.
Okay.
That you've done, and say you hope you'll consider. You'll hope they'll consider that. That's normally the best way to do it. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. That's great because I've kept a kudos folder in my email.
Perfect. All right. I will thank you for the call. I want to try to help as many people as I can. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air.
Hello. This is Phyllis.
Hi, Phyllis.
And thank you for playing the piano.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
Enjoyed your composition and enjoyed your attitude on it.
Oh, thank you.
What I am calling about is for the past 5 years, I have been trying to make a go at a glass artist.
Mm-hmm.
I've been somewhat successful at it. However, with the economy being as it is, I need to get back into what I have done in the past, which is working in advertising as a media buyer and planner.
You mean making glass paperweights is not a survival item that everybody has to have?
No, it's not something that you absolutely have to have, but
right.
It's made in America, and it's keeping Americans working.
Okay. Anyway, I was kind of playing around.
I know you were.
Okay. So,
and I'm just giving back what I usually tell my clients.
All right, very good.
It's all made in America.
You know, that's something I've never really understood. Especially people who are liberals celebrate, you know, talk about not being prejudiced toward one group against another. And yet they were willing to embrace made in America. I care as much about somebody in Bangladesh as I do in Arkansas. They're people. Why do we care about made in America?
Because that is your community. And you
but
want
are, is it not the, are we not part of the world community? I mean, why is America
because
or the
I
Bay Area our community?
Anyway, I think we're kind of...
going off topic. Okay.
Anyway.
So you want to go back to advertising. Go ahead.
So... I have been working in advertising on a consulting basis.
Mm-hmm.
The person who I've been working for, the projects are drying up, but I haven't really worked that much this year. So I've been mostly living on my glass, but I do need to move into the advertising direction. And so my question is how do I position myself?
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't. A lot of people I don't tell I've been self-employed.
Yeah. I want to notice a couple of things. You sound like you've got a few years on you, not 20 years old, and most of the advertising industry, especially the agency-based business, is 20-somethings in pencil skirts. And so am I correct in saying that, you know, in addition, the whole the ad agency business is really kind of drying up. A lot more of the business is being done in-house. Would you like to go in-house for some company? And if so, are you more of a media buyer type? Are you more creative? Are you more account executive type? What's your niche within advertising?
I'm more of a media buyer and planner.
Okay. And,
I would like to go in-house. I definitely would like to go in-house. I have been looking at both.
Okay. And because you have a couple of years on you, we want to use that to your advantage. You know, there are some companies that are obviously selling into the 16 to 24 demographic. I mean, you're not going to be working for the agencies that represent record labels like, you know, that sell to, you know, Lady Gaga or whatever, you know, sell Lady Gaga stuff. Am I correct? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you are 25. Can I ask how old you are?
No, I'm over 50. But I don't look it. I look like I'm in my mid-40s.
Right. Looks, I don't matter. But the point is that when you are in your 50s, you have a better understanding of the 55 to 64 demographic. So you're going to be wanting going in-house with a company whose products are heavily bought by the boomer generation. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so let's start with some of your interests. What are you a consumer of? What do you yourself like buying?
I don't really have disposable income.
Let's say I gave you $50,000. How would you spend it?
Pay off debts.
Yeah. What would you buy? Because I'm trying to find out what.
You know, I wouldn't sit there and if I had $1,000, I'd probably get my brakes fixed.
Okay. So you're, but you're.
I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not. I wouldn't call myself a huge consumer.
Okay.
What I'm passionate about is I do like the new technology that television is going. And I do like, I stream my TV with a Roku box. I don't sit there and play games, so the game players aren't my goal. But I subscribe to Netflix and Hulu Plus, and I also get different TV channels.
Okay, so here's a weird idea.
Mm-hmm.
You're unusual in that sense, and I'm always liked the unusual. Most people, when they get older, they're more tech-phobic. So I'm wondering if you might go to companies that create tech products and say, I'm going to go and develop some kind of a marketing, I'm not quite sure what it is, something marketing and advertising related that would help the boomers to be somebody who'd embrace Hulu or embrace, you know, Netflix or whatever. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I mean, I'm very interested in something like the Roku box because it is talking to someone who's been involved in technology for over 20 years. So okay. They're older people.
So here's what I'd like you to do. This is not the complete solution, but it's a baby step forward. I'd like you to study the company that makes the Roku box.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to read. I want you to Google it. I want you to Google the blogosphere. I want you to Google the shopping engines. I want you to read your reviews of the products. I want you to become the go-to girl on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in light of that, I want you to write a letter to the company's head of marketing or advertising or whatever, and explain that you have a particular passion for the Roku box and you have a lot of experience as a media buyer. And because you're in your 50s, you are somebody who might be in a particularly good position to do smart media buying, smart media planning for the Roku box as it tries to get more attention from the 55-plus age demographic and see what that germinates. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. But now one of my questions is, do I not talk about my art business?
It's irrelevant. I think it's not going to help. I think what you want to talk about, you don't send a resume because a resume is going to merely lay bare that you've been self-employed for a while.
Well, what I do with my resume is because I've had an ongoing, actually it's about an 8-year relationship with the same agency. I put them down as an employer and put contract work.
Yeah, what you want to say, you know, don't worry about a resume. What you write, just send them a letter.
Okay.
The letter would highlight the things that you best bring to the table. All right, I hope that helps. At least it's a baby step forward, and I wish you the best of luck with that.
Thank you.
Okay. And I've got almost no time, so what am I going to do? I've got so many more tips. Darn it, I don't have a chance to do them, so I'm going to just be laid back and say that's it. All right, so I hope that was somewhat helpful. That is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Eric Jansen, and Jeffrey Givens. Thank you very much for coming in and sharing a little bit of your baby step example, and I certainly hope you do get the cast. And, of course, most of all, I thank all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers, workovers on callers. And I will this guy is a top-rated TED Talk presenter. His name is Cameron Harold. And he and I are going to kick around our ideas on how to best create more entrepreneurs, what parents can do, what schools can do, what the government can do, what the private sector can do. So until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
More than 500 of Marty Nemco's published articles and chapters from his book, Cool Career for Dummies, are free on his website. From there, you can also email him if you'd like coaching on your career or want to comment on this program. His site, martynemco.com. That's Marty, N-E-M-K-O. Join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemco here on 91.7 FM KALW San Francisco.